All right. Well, this morning we're looking again at this season. We're starting to look forward and what that looks like. But what I wanted to start with this idea of names, right? And names are significant. And I thought about doing this. I was going to look and I was going to find someone that wasn't quite paying attention this morning and shout their name out, right? But that would, and that, because names have power, right? They have authority, right? If I use your name and you are, you know, if you're walking down the street and I yell your name, that gets your attention. It's kind of a power. If I say, hey, you, right, you might, you know, not even pay any attention, right? Especially if it's, you know, it's my voice and you're like, they're not talking to me, I'm going to keep going, right? Anyway, so, but names matter, right? They're significant. Kind of an unfortunate story that I read this week. There was a gentleman who couldn't get a job interview, right? He kept filling out all these applications, sending out these applications, and just wasn't getting interviews until finally, one day an interview does show up. This gentleman's name was Jose. And finally, though, he gets, this Jose, he gets a call for an interview, and he's really excited, and he goes in for this interview. And when he gets there, they come in, the guy introduces himself, and he says, hey, Joe, how you doing? And Jose's like, did I put the wrong name on the application? It took for him to put the wrong name on the application to get an interview. And that's an unfortunate story, an unfortunate situation, but names are significant in that way, right? A more lighthearted story. I don't know if anybody's seen the Barney Miller show. It's a show from the 70s. A few of you have, okay. I don't think any until I watched a few. When I see an illustration, I have to watch several things to get into the character of it or whatever. But anyway, old TV sitcom called Barney Miller. Group of detectives in New York, and there's one episode where they get called to this bank robbery, and they rush out to this bank robbery. The crooks got away, but this detective, and if you know how to say this, you're doing better than I am, but it's Wachowiczki. Thank you. That's what Al Roger said. This detective said he could solve the crime. He's going to figure out who it was because he heard one of the crooks yell to the other crook his name. And so the whole episode, he's trying to remember. I can't remember his name. So he'd go and he'd say, oh, I know, it's Hay. Just wouldn't come to him. No, it's Hay. He couldn't come up with it until finally at the end of the episode, he's like, I got it. I figured out who it was. His name is Behind Ya, because I heard him say, hey, Behind Ya, it's a cop. Behind you. All right, anyway, names are significant. And even in the Bible especially, names have great significance. If you read through the Old Testament especially, but even into the New, the naming of a child had a lot of identity with it, right? A lot of times it'd be a family name, or it'd have meaning as far as carrying a destiny or carrying rich meaning, symbolic meaning, or a character trait. We had different characters throughout the stories to reveal their purpose, his or her purpose or role in what God was going to do, and their name fulfilled that purpose. We saw that in the children's story, Ezra and Nehemiah. Their names were significant for their role in history. God even came into history, into time, to change certain people's names so that it better fit what they were doing or where they were going to go. And in our story this morning, we have three characters as we kind of prepare for Christmas. This morning, three individuals that I'd like to look at that have significant names. And they are Zechariah, Elizabeth, and John, their son John. And we see John's significant event here in Luke 1. If you've got your Bibles in Luke chapter 1, we're going to start at the end and then jump back to the beginning. But in Luke chapter 1, we see the naming of John and the significance of his name and the situation there. And so in 1 John 1, verse 57, it says, now the time came for Elizabeth to give birth, and she bore a son. And her neighbors and relatives heard that the Lord had shown great mercy to her, and they rejoiced with her. On the eighth day, they came to circumcise the child, and they would have named him Zechariah after his father. But his mother answered, no, he shall be called John. And they said to her, well, none of your relatives is called by this name. And they made signs to his father, inquiring what he wanted him to be called. And Zechariah asked for a writing tablet and wrote, his name is John. And they all wondered. But immediately his mouth was opened, his tongue loosed, and he spoke, blessing God. And fear came on all the neighbors, and all the things were talked about throughout the whole hill country of Judea. And all who heard them laid up in their hearts, saying, what then will this child be? For the hand of the Lord was with him. We see the significance of the name, of the naming of John in this story. And there's lots of different details in here we'll kind of cover here in a second. But The names of these of this small family point to a point a message of hope, a message of expectation. Zachariah's name means God remembers. Elizabeth's name means God is my oath. And John's name means God has been gracious. God remembers, God is my oath, and God has been gracious. And we know that God indeed remembers his promises. He heard the prayers of Zachariah and Elizabeth. If you know their story of fulfillment in their situation and in their circumstances, especially in terms of their son John. And God sent an angel to share the message of assurance to Zechariah while he was in the temple. This promise that God makes is one of those things where when God makes a promise, you know it's going to happen, right? I can make a promise, and depending upon who you ask, maybe I'll come up with, right? I feel like I'm pretty reliable, right? Most of the time I say I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it, right? Most of us are that way. But I can't guarantee that, right? I've made promises where I didn't follow through. I use the word maybe a lot now because it's a lot easier to not follow through then. But, you know, right, when God makes a promise, though, God says it's going to happen. We know it's going to happen. God is going to fulfill that promise. And we see God's word to Zechariah and Elizabeth was a word of power, and it's sealed with an unbreakable oath that we see come to fruition in Elizabeth. And then ultimately we see it that God's graciousness comes through fulfillment in the son, in their son John. And so what we're going to see here this morning is as we look at Luke chapter 1, when we look at their story, we're going to see the experience and the anticipation. But then we see at the end of the story, as we get to the end, Zechariah's response, which I think is such a cool response, following what he goes through and the experience that he has. And so we're going to jump back again into verse 5 is where we're going to start. After kind of Luke's introduction here, he breaks into the story, jumps into the story of how God shows he remembers, how God makes an oath, and how God graciously fulfills the promises and the oaths that he makes. In the days of Herod, king of Judea, there was a priest named Zechariah of the division of Abijah, and he had a wife from the daughters of Aaron, and her name was Elizabeth. And they were both righteous before God, walking blamelessly in all the commandments and statutes of the Lord. But they had no child because Elizabeth was barren and both were advanced in years. And so we see kind of the beginning of the story, right? There's a couple really important things that are describe Zechariah and Elizabeth, right? They're up walking blamelessly in the commandments. They're righteous before God. Some pretty prominent descriptors that are only given to a handful of people in the Old Testament, Noah and Abraham and Job. So they are in pretty good standing. They're in pretty good company with that. But then they also are both from priestly lines, and in that time especially, priests would have been highly regarded, highly honored, and they would have double honor because Zechariah is from a priestly tribe and then his wife Elizabeth as well. And so there would have been a lot of honor due to this couple. The problem is when a couple can't have a baby, especially in that culture, there's a lot of stigma around it. There's a lot of negativity around it, right? I was thinking of some mothers, and I don't know if we have any this morning by any means, but the old joke from a lot of various sitcoms talk about how this mother, when the daughter gets to be out of college and she's 25, well, you're not married and have kids yet, right? And she gets older and you're not married and have kids, this pressure that a mom can put on her kids. In that culture, there was so much more pressure on a couple having kids. And in fact, they would have looked at that couple and they would have started to wonder some things, right? Well, is God punishing them, right? Well, what have they done? What secret do they have? What sin is in their life that God isn't allowing them to have kids, right? And there's a certain amount maybe that's still of that in the church, right? When you hear on TV that Hurricane Katrina was the reason, was God's punishment on Louisiana, right? Or why there was a shooting in Las Vegas was because of the sin there. And that's to me a terrible, terrible understanding of who God is, just an awful understanding of who God is. Because we don't understand, even if God, when and God does, or how God punishes, we just don't know. And so to make claims like that is harsh. But in that culture, it was even worse. It was even harsher. So the stigma and the negativity that surround them not having kids almost outweighed all of the things that they were doing and who they were. And so there are a lot of things happening in that culture and a lot of tension, I would say, in Zechariah and Elizabeth's life. But one of the things that I think Elizabeth especially could rely on, or something she could look back on, is that there's a precedent for Old Testament ladies, women in her culture and her nationality in the Old Testament that were just like her. And the main tie, the main correlation that we can see between Zechariah and Elizabeth in the Old Testament was with Abraham and Sarah. The story of Abraham and Sarah, who God promises Abraham that he'd have kids, that he'd have a huge nation, that he'd be blessed. And by the time he gets to 100, or just before he turns 100, he still doesn't have any kids. And so there's that stigma and that frustration. God has promised this, made an oath to him, but where is this child? And finally we see in Abraham and Sarah the son Isaac being born. And the stories between God, these two couples is remarkable and significant, seeing how God remembers, how God makes an oath, and how God graciously, again, fulfills the life. And with the birth of John, not only does that fulfill the promises and the anticipation of Zechariah and Elizabeth as parents, but John sets the stage for the things that will come for all of us as he prepares the way for Christ to come as well. Let's keep reading in verse 8 of Luke chapter 1. He says, "Now while Zechariah was serving as priest before God, when his division was on duty, according to the custom of the priesthood, he was chosen by lot to enter the temple of the Lord and burn incense. And the whole multitude of people were praying outside at the hour of incense." And so Zechariah is this old priest. He's a member of what's called the division of Abijah. And I could talk about the different divisions and all how that fits and stuff, and I won't do that this morning. But what's fascinating about this story is that there were hundreds of priests that could have done what Zechariah did this at this time. The offering of incense was a pretty standard, regular practice. I think they did it a couple times a day at least. And anyone could have done it, and there were hundreds, if not thousands, of priests that could have done this duty at that time for Zechariah. But they cast lots, which is kind of like they rolled dice, you know, basically just chance, drawing a hat, you know, name out of a hat kind of a thing. And so in so many ways, this was a once-in-a-lifetime unique opportunity for Zechariah to do this. And in so many ways, it's a miraculous event for Zechariah even to be able to go into the temple to offer this sacrifice, to do this incense burning. In verse 11, we keep reading, it says, "And there appeared to Zechariah an angel, an angel of the Lord standing at the right side of the altar of incense. And Zechariah was troubled when he saw him, and fear fell upon him." Probably our natural reaction, right? You see an angel, you get a little weak in the knees, probably. Think most of us would. "But the angel said, 'Do not be afraid, Zechariah, for your prayer has been heard, and your wife Elizabeth will bear you a son, and you shall call his name John. And you will have joy and gladness, and many will rejoice at his birth, for he will be great before the Lord, and he must not drink wine or strong drink, and he will be filled with the Holy Spirit even from his mother's womb. And he will turn many of the children of Israel to the Lord their God, and he will go before them in the spirit and power of Elijah, to turn the hearts of the fathers to the children and the disobedient to the wisdom of the just, to make ready for the Lord a people prepared.'" But Zechariah asked, after he's getting this wonderful message of, "You're going to be a dad, he's going to be all these wonderful things," Zechariah says, "Well, how am I to know this? How shall I know this? For I am an old man, my wife is advanced in years." And the angel answered, "I am Gabriel. I stand in the presence of God and was sent to speak to you and to bring you this good news. And behold, you will be silent and unable to speak until the day that these things take place, because you did not believe my words, which will be fulfilled in their time." And it's kind of a raw deal, I think, that Zechariah gets, right? Because if we read through all the different stories where an angel shows up, most of the time somebody says, you know, Abraham or even Mary later on, they'll say, like, "Well, how is this going to happen, or what's going to take place?" And none of them get the same treatment that Zechariah gets. Zechariah is told that he can't talk and can't communicate for the 9 months of their pregnancy. And I was going to take a poll and ask see if you'd like your spouse to be silent. We won't go there. So you can have that debate at home. But, you know, what why he gets that raw deal. Because actually, a chapter later, if we went to Mary's story, where Gabriel appears to Mary, the mother of Jesus, when she says, well, how is this going to take place? I don't have a husband. A choir of angels shows up and starts singing to her. So I don't know what the difference is there. But the main reason, I don't know exactly why, it's not really explained to us why Zechariah is mute, but it probably has something to do, even though others have questioned the angel, I think he had a further and deeper doubt. And that's really what the text says, is he doubted, and so that's why he received what he received in the situation he fell into. And when you think about it, that's a pretty big time out, right? For 9 months not being able to communicate. And you know, if you're a parent, you put your kids in the corner, right? 5 minutes feels like an eternity to them, right? And for my kids, it gets close to an eternity because I forget they're in there, right? And so finally I hear down the hall, can I come out? Can I come out? And usually I let them out eventually. But, you know, 9 months is a long time out to sit and to not be able to communicate, not be able to say anything. But the amazing thing is that God is teaching him something. I think he's teaching us something in that as well, in that he has prepared something. He has a plan, and since the very beginning, he has had and authored this story of salvation, of deliverance, of redemption, of bringing people back to him. And really, Christmas, that's what it's all about, right? It's the Advent. We call it Advent. It's the arrival, the anticipation of the coming Messiah, of God himself coming. He's bringing this wonderful, beautiful, marvelous light into this world that is just filled with darkness, right? And into our hearts, which are usually so often very dark as well. And we see Zechariah and Elizabeth, and no doubt they've been praying not only for the birth of their own child, but the coming of this Messiah as well, along with their fellow, you know, kinsmen. And they've been praying and praying and asking and asking, and they're older and probably 60 or older at this point in time. They're older, not even past the, you know, childbearing age. And they're wondering, what is this going to happen? How is this going to take place? And I wonder about us sometimes, you know, how do we tie into this story? How do we fit into this situation? And how many of us, right, say, when, God, when is this going to happen? How is this going to happen? When are you going to take care of that person or that situation? Or when am I going to feel relief from this? When are you going to step into my world and take care of this? Or maybe we ask, why? Why do I have to deal with this? Why do I have this job? Why do I have this physical pain? Why did that have to happen? And those are okay questions. I think we should wrestle with them with God. But sometimes it's just about patience. Sometimes it's just about waiting. Tom Petty, and I was going to sing it, but I won't. Tom Petty sang the song, "Waiting is the hardest part. Every day you see one more card, you take it on faith. You take it to the heart. The waiting is the hardest part." And that's really where Zechariah and Elizabeth were at. They had to wait and wait and wait, even beyond the time that they thought that it would happen. And as they were about to give birth to a baby that would grow to be the prophet that we call John the Baptist, or John the Baptizer, and would be God, and John would be God's gracious provision, John provided that fulfillment and that promise not only to Zechariah and Elizabeth, but to all of the Jewish people waiting for their Messiah. And John wasn't going to be the Messiah, but John set the stage to bring that Messiah into the world. If we look at a couple of verses, one in Isaiah 43, it says, "A voice cries in the wilderness, prepare the way of the Lord, make straight in the desert a highway for our God." And in Malachi 3, verse 1, it says, "Behold, I send my messenger, and he will prepare the way before me. And the Lord whom you seek will suddenly come to his temple, and the messenger of the covenant in whom you delight. Behold, he is coming, says the Lord of hosts." And so we see in the story of Zechariah and Elizabeth that Zechariah, because of his unbelief, because he doubted, he's silent for 9 months. And then we see the birth of his son, John, and he's able to speak. He's able to communicate again. But the amazing thing about all of these things that come together is their response. And again, Zechariah had to wait for years and years and years for a son to come, then he had to wait to be able to speak again. And I wonder for us how that could look, right? We celebrate this time of year every year, right? Some of us have done it for quite a few years, right? I'll let you fill in the blank. But, you know, we do this all the time. But the amazing thing and one of the great things about Christmas is that it gives us an opportunity to be reminded, to say, okay, God, help me prepare for your coming. And I'm not talking about like the second coming and Christ returning or anything like that. How can I allow him to come into my heart and into my life on a deeper level? How can I allow myself to stop and to pause long enough for him to say something to me? There's a devotion that I've been doing the last few weeks here, and you do it twice a day. I do it mornings and lunchtime for 5 days a week. And before you start and when you're done with the devotion every time, there's 2 minutes of silence. And have you ever sat for 2 minutes completely silent for recently, right? Other than maybe trying to go to bed, right? It can be a little hard sometimes, especially when you try not to, you know, let your mind wander a million different ways, right? But what I've learned in that, and I think what Zechariah learned, is that God can speak to us in that silence. God can talk and say something into that time. When we stop our mind, stop, you know, our busy minds, we stop playing music in the background, the TV's not on, we stop messing around with things, we lock the kids in the closet because that's the only place we can put them. I'm a terrible parent, I know. But don't call the government. All right, so, when we stop and we're silent for just a couple minutes, maybe it's 2 minutes four times a day like I do, maybe it's 15 minutes at the end of the day or 15 minutes in the morning, God can speak to us. And it's not to process things or work through things in our mind. You know, we have to have time for that, but it's time to just stop. And I hope I never have to, you know, get the 9 months that Zechariah got, right? But I think most of us could probably handle something that long where God is allowed to speak to us because we have to be quiet. And so I guess that's my encouragement this next few weeks is instead of allowing our minds and our hearts to race and run around, instead of asking why, God, why, or when, God, when, instead of asking all these different things, is we just stop. We're just quiet. And like Zechariah's example, we remember that he remembers. He's made a promise, and he remembers that promise. He's made this oath, and he's going to bring it into fruition and find and provide us with grace. And that is the beginning of Advent. As we close this morning, we're going to watch a short video of what Zechariah's experience might have looked like as we begin our Advent season.
What do you mean you can't speak? You put that down and talk to me, Zechariah. You went to the temple to burn incense, and now you can't speak. Oh, because you doubted. What does that even mean? You doubted what an angel told you. Oh, now it's all making sense. Are you feeling all right, huh? Maybe you should sit down. Oh, I should sit down. Listen, whatever game you're playing, I really wanted to stop, Zechariah. It isn't funny. This isn't funny, Zechariah. An angel told you this. The angel said that our prayers have been heard. That you, my love, will bear a son. We will be filled with joy and gladness, and that many will rejoice at his birth. He will be like Elijah. He will prepare our people for the Lord. I'm too old to be a mother. And you, You can't even speak. Oh, you can't even speak until he's born. Oh, that might not be the worst thing. I can't wait to tell my cousin Mary. We will call him Zachariah, yes?